9:30 a 10 de la noche. Nuestra voz, aquí, por el 90.7 FM, kpfk.org.
Estás sintonizando Radio Pacífica, KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Ángeles y 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara y alrededor del mundo por kpfk.org.
Estás escuchando tu estación favorita, KPFK, Radio Pacífica, 90.7 FM Los Ángeles y a través del mundo por kpfk.org.
It's not as easy to be Mexican in LA. Like, we're not all the same. We all think very different. We're not all one single monolith, you know, because there's differences if you were a recent immigrant or if you've been here in the United States for many generations or if you're Latino from another country in Latin America. We have so many layers to our identity that is unfair to lump us all in one group, even though we all have the same origins and maybe even the same DNA, per se. And growing up here in the United States, it's very, very complex in the sense that we live in a racist country. We really do. You know, this country was founded on racism and hate. One of the things that we encounter as Mexican descendants or Mexicans here in the United States is all the different classifications that we have. When you grow up in California, you learn about these things, right? It becomes shocking when you are a recent immigrant, right? If you're a recent immigrant from Mexico and you go to school here, you find yourself in this cultural shock, even within your own people. Even though I grew up, there was a period in my life where my parents had to send me to Mexico because my parents were divorcing. I want to say this was around the early 90s. And in the early 90s, when I went to Mexico, it was a cultural shock. I mean, we're the same people. We spoke the similar language. I mean, we spoke Spanish. My Spanish wasn't as good when I went to Mexico. I remember even having a hard time adapting in Mexican schools. But after a time, I learned to love it. And I became part of Mexican society and Mexican culture, and I embraced it. A few years after, my parents get back together, and I come back to the United States because everything was much better in my home, right? My family was getting together. I was reuniting with my sisters that were already here in the United States. My sisters never actually left. It was just me and my mother that left. My sister stayed. So when I come back, it's around maybe the mid-90s. And in the mid-90s, not only was it a culture shock to live in Mexico, but to come back and to find yourself with a group of people that look like you and maybe sound like you, but think very different than you, right? Especially when it comes to your heritage. And this is what we're going to talk about with Brenda Martinez, how complex it is to be of Mexican descent. And in these times when there's so much divisiveness among our own people based on, you know, in my opinion, sometimes very silly things that, you know, happen to people here in the United States, right? Especially that happen to Mexicans here in the United States, right? So I'm glad to bring on Brenda Martinez from a show called Perspectivas. She brings a lot of insight and knowledge to this podcast. And I know that you guys might relate to some of the stuff we're talking about. So I thought it would be perfect to bring on Brenda because she also grew up here and her and I share similar experiences.
I appreciate you inviting me. And yeah, I can totally relate, you know, but for me, it happened the other way around. You know, for me, just coming from Mexico to here, and that shock, you know, because I was already a teenager. I don't know how old you were, but I was already a teenager. I was already, you know, rebellious. I came with my siblings, and it was like a super big shock. And then we came in the middle of the school year. So it was very difficult. Very, very difficult. But the main difficulty that we need to adjust, it was the race. Because they were so racist. Even our own people, even our own classmates that you thought, they look exactly like me, they should be able to help me. They're like jerks. I'm sorry, but they're like, you know, I'm sorry, I don't speak Spanish.
I got that too.
You know, and it used to get me so upset because I went to school where the majority of the teachers were white and they didn't speak Spanish. And so it was a really big shock. And then the school was divided into the Latinos, and there was almost no Blacks, but it was the Latinos and people from the Middle East. It was a big community of people from the Middle East. And so you wouldn't even dare to mix with them, you know? So it was very interesting. It was super, super interesting. I have to say that, you know, our experiences are very similar in some ways. I also experienced, though, seeing kids from the U.S. coming to my school when I was in Mexico.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
That was, and seeing how everybody else treated them, that was very, very weird, too.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so I can relate to what you're saying, but in Mexico, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if you experienced this, but I was living in the city, in Mexico City, and going to school in Mexico City, and our seeing kids that were coming from the U.S., it was a little different. The kids were like so, you know, they're like show off. Like, I speak English and you don't. You know?
Oh, by the way.
I come from the U.S. and you don't.
But were these white Anglo-Americans, or are we talking about?
Mexicanos.
Oh, Mexicanos. I see what you mean. Yeah. That happened to me too when I went to school in Michoacan. There was Mexican-American kids that were either born or had lived in the United States and then lived in Mexico. For example, I was always, you know, because of my light skin complexion, I was always, people always assumed that I was not Mexican for some reason, even though in my classroom, we had two main colors. Either you were native, you know, darker skin, or you were mestizo, or you were just very, very light complected. And I kind of stood in kind of in between the middle there, but I was always accused of being an American, or what they call a gringo, right? Always accused of it. But I guess I learned with time for it not to bother me, because it only happened when they didn't know me. But after they knew me, everything was normal. And I think in retrospect, I don't blame them for having that opinion. I mean, we had horrible trauma with Anglo-Americans through history. I do remember that I would be teased. Again, I was a strong kid, and I never let that, you know, bother me much. So I understand completely what you're saying, because it was two of us in my classroom that had lived in the United States before. And yeah, sure, we were always volunteered for translating, always volunteered for our experience, and everybody always wanted to know how it was living in the United States. But this was in the 90s, right? For me, Michoacan. So I think it was actually very different for you, probably, since you were
yes.
Bitty.
Oh, yeah.
Bitty.
It was more modern out there.
Yes. It, yeah, there was more pollution too, and this, but it was definitely more violence too, because I used to live in a colonia that was very shady. But it was interesting, you know. It was interesting to grow up in that environment. But I also, it was interesting to see how, like, it didn't take long to accept those kids in when I was living in Mexico, you know. It didn't take long. Like, okay, at first they were, like, annoying, and you're, like, you know, didn't want to have anything to do with them, and everybody will, like, ignore them. But eventually you're, like, once they had, like, one person allowing them to join their group, that was it. You know, everybody forgot who you, like, you know, everything else. Like, oh, you're just one of us. That's it, period.
Yeah.
But here in the U.S., wasn't like that, you know?
For me in Mexico, they wanted to know what side I was on, basically.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of nationalism.
There's a lot of, but I feel there was a lot of nationalism back then. Now, not so much so. This brings back so many memories, Brenda.
And in Mexico City, okay, era, ¿le vas al águila, a las águilas o a la América? You know, that was it. They don't care if you were, like, from the U.S. It's like, okay, now you're in Mexico. Águilas o América.
Exactly.
Perdón, al Cruz Azul o a la América. Cruz Azul o a la América. That was it. If you, like, say what, which was hilarious, because let me tell you, my uncle was going to this barbershop, like, for most of his life. When he find out this guy was being on the opposite team that he was, my dear, stop going to see this barber.
He's
like, no, that's it. He goes to the Cruz Azul or whatever. And so in Mexico, that was the biggest thing, you know? It was like, this is the only thing I care about. I don't care if you're like, you come from the U.S. or whatever.
I had to fight a lot as a man. How to,
like,
fight.
Physically fight
because I was challenged. I remember I was challenged the first day I showed up to the school. The very first day, the kids looked at me and said, who is this gringo? Right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now let me just say this. The demographics in Michoacán are mostly people of indigenous complexion or brown folk. But there's also a pocket of light-complected folks, and I happen to be in that pocket of the light-complected folks. Now, I'm still Mexican. It's just that I'm from that pocket of the light-complected folks. But I remember I was, like I said before, I was always accused of being a gringo. And the first day I remember in school, some kids started picking on me, and I was always a tough kid, but I was alone this time. And I don't even remember what the fight was about, but before the gates opened to enter the school, I'm only going to say Michoacán. I'm not going to say where. But the gates open, and these kids got around in the circle, and one kid wanted to challenge me to fight, and then we wouldn't fight. We would push each other around. One kid put his hand in front of our faces and said, in Spanish, el que escupa aquí es valiente. Naturally, we both spit. And the kid moved his hand, and it landed on each other, and that launched the fight. But you know what happened? After the fight, now I gained respect. Right now the kids wanted my respect, but I had to fight three other times with other guys, with the bullies in the school, because they all, even if I told them where I was from, they all felt that I was a gringo. It wasn't until after I had to fight over and over with kids that I gained respect. But you know what? After that, we were all good, and we were all buddy buddies.
Yes.
But yeah, that is how rough it was. And this was, by the way, this was a public school, because at the time my mother couldn't afford, you know, the private schools. So this is why I think it was worse for me at the time, Brenda.
Yeah, no, for me it was also public school. And then Mexico City, we're talking like classrooms full of like maybe 60, 70 students, you know. When I was in middle school in Mexico, it was like 60 students in one classroom. And yeah, I mean, so it was big schools, a lot of kids. But I don't remember so much. Like, there was always fist fights, because boys, they're
boys. Yeah.
With girls, it was always like this whole, you know, gossip and, you know, being mean to each other. But eventually you just like got along. But here in the U.S. was a completely different experience. Here in the U.S., I felt like I couldn't fit in. I tried and tried and tried and couldn't really fit in. And I felt racism from everyone, including my teachers. Some of the teachers were the most racist. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Before we get into our experience here in the United States, I feel like I had to clear some things up, because even though some things were rough, at least for me in the state of Michoacán, in the school, public school that I went to, things were rough. They weren't bad per se, because till this day, I still credit my experience and everything I know and the way I am because I went to that school, because I did have great teachers. And I had one great teacher in particular. Every now and then I remember him and I listen to his voice in my head. I don't know. I don't even know if this teacher's still alive, but I should. I should try to find out and thank him. He told me a lot of this, of what I was going to experience in the United States. He told me, he gave me that pride in my people at a very young age when he did it. And the reason why he did it is because he saw me having a hard time adapting. And this is particularly when I was talking about that I was fighting all the time. He saw that, and he would keep me after class and tell me the history of Mexico and talk to me about our origin and our cultures. And I really credit that, and I'm so glad to have had him in my life, that ever since I was left a very long time ago, I always hear his voice in my head, and I always do what I think I should. I always do the right thing for my people. And it's, you know, 45 years later, look at me now. I'm still somewhat thinking of him and remembering his teachings. So it wasn't all bad, at least for me, because, you know, you were in Mexico City. I was in Michoacán. In our classrooms, I don't remember them being full. I don't remember having any real serious issues at the school. But again, two different places. For me, it was slightly different.
I also experienced something similar when we were given the news that we were going to the U.S. For me, it was a shock. I was like, no way. I am not going anywhere unless you pick me up, you carry me into the airplane. I'm just not going on my own. But the word spread around school that these kids were going to go to the U.S. And same like you, we had a lot of teachers. The culture is very different in Mexico, too. You know, people are warm. People are welcoming. And yeah, even though kids are a little feisty at the beginning, they you know, people are different than here. They welcome you. They're warm. The society is different. But our teacher was exactly the same way. It was like, gave us a whole speech to my siblings and I, and said, never lose track of who you are, where you came from, and be always proud of your culture. And you're going into, you know, like she made it sound like, you know, you're going into the most horrible place in the world.
Yeah. Wow.
You know? And she's like, but never, never forget who you are, where you come from. And you guys are, you know, part of this proud race and blah, blah, blah. And you guys are strong and this, you know, it was really, and she had always been like that, but she wanted to like, just make sure that we had her voice ringing in the back of our heads.
It's so interesting to me that you had a very similar experience.
Yeah. And of course, we got like a speech from all my aunts and my uncles, and you know, because I grew up around a lot of people, and my grandma had 12 kids, so I had a lot of uncles and aunts, and wow. Yeah, and some of them were like, you know, highly educated, and they were always teaching us to, you know, to say, one of my uncles used to say this. This is my my tío who married my aunt, my mom's sister. He would say, look, if you are informed and if you focus yourself on learning and informing yourself, no one is going to manipulate you. No one is going to make you do things that you don't want to. You know? So if right. His thing was like, educate yourself. Like, knowledge is, it's power. Knowledge is power. Use it. And I just, you know, remember those words. And I said, okay. So my goal when we were here is like, okay, we got to learn. We have to be keeping ourselves informed. But it was very difficult, the transition, you know.
Yeah. Same thing happened to me that happened to you, in the sense that I didn't want to come. I was happy. I already had, I finally had established friendships and bonds with the community and with my people. And then all of a sudden, parents are getting back together. Let's fix things. And I didn't even care. I'm like, wow, I'm going to be pulled from my roots again and moved into a different area where I have to start all over again. And sure enough, it was really hard. Actually, it was harder on the way back than on the way over there. It was easier for me to adapt in Mexico than it was for me to readapt in the United States. Before we continue, I want to remind you guys that you're listening to Contragolpe and Perspectivas with Brenda Martinez. We're doing a little collaboration here like we do on Visual Frontier. For a very long time, we didn't know, we're still not sure what our audience is, because our audience is so complex, right? We have bilingual people, we have Chicano people that only speak English, and then we have the Mexican community, which I think is the most, that only probably mostly speak Spanish. So we're in this weird limbo where it's kind of hard for us to find our target audience. So, but if you appreciate the work that we do and the programming we're giving you and we're bringing back memories, please comment on the video and let us know what your experience was. So we're here with Brenda Martinez, just reminiscing of how it was growing up in Mexico and going to school and coming back and going to school here in the United States and readapting and having to deal with like this, I mean, I guess very ignorant divide amongst our people and all the complexities that come along with it. Like, you know, even different cultures and the culture shock, right, that we have to live through here in the United States. And Brenda was about to tell us about what her experience was here in the United States now, no? Before the break, you know, she was telling us about her experience in Mexico. Now let's hear a little bit about our experience here in the United States. It's kind of interesting. I think it just gets very controversial. After you arrive here.
Very complex too, but also, you know, there was like arriving here, it wasn't just a cultural shock, it was experiencing the racism that you see a little bit in Mexico, but here was like, I look just like you and you are treating me like, you know, like we're totally different people. That was the biggest shock for me, that kids who look just like me, where I could, you know, and I had heard them spoke Spanish, they just refused to speak Spanish with me. So starting school was, and then I came in the middle of the school year. So some of the ESL kids, do you remember those classes? Do you have to go back to those? That English as a second language classes.
I never had to go to ESL, but I know that I know that some people that took ESL classes were horribly discriminated.
Oh, yeah.
By our people, by Chicanos.
Yes. Okay, so just being in the school was one thing. Okay, all the kids would be like teasing you and saying all those things in English and just making fun of you and laughing, and you had no idea what the hell was happening. But outside of the school was the same thing. You know, outside of school, getting on the bus to get to my house, it was exactly the same thing, because some of those kids were in the bus and they will be making fun of you and they'll be laughing and saying things. And my cousins, you know, my cousin spoke English only and very little Spanish. And so he'll make fun of us. And he was constantly, you know, playing tricks on us, like, oh, repeat this word. And then you're repeating the word. You have no idea what you're saying. And he's laughing on the floor. And my aunt is like, you are so mean. Stop doing that to your cousin. You know, so it was a lot of that. But one of the worst things, I can tell you a story. So one of the worst experiences that I had is when I came into middle school. I had a PE teacher. Okay. You figured, hey, PE should be the easiest class. Well, the PE teacher had this thing where all the kids who were newcomers from Mexico, because the majority were Mexican, then you had to do the chicken dance in front of everybody.
Whoa.
She was white. So she was like, okay, so I came in the middle of the school year. So I was like one of the only kids who was like, I think it was like me in that classroom only. And she goes, oh, you have to do the chicken dance, because every kid who comes from Mexico and into my classroom, you know, their first day, they have to do this.
Well, I can't believe what I'm hearing. Are you serious?
I'm serious. So, but I was rebellious. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. And of course, she had gotten another student to translate because she didn't speak Spanish. And so the other student is like, you're supposed to do it. You know, you're supposed to do it. And I'm like, hell no, I am not doing it. And she's like, oh, you're going to get in trouble. I said, I don't care. So I said, tell the teacher. And the teacher would be like, what? She just stood up. She got all red. And I didn't speak English. So all I could remember was like the way she looked. And then she's like, you're going to do the chicken dance. Like she's screaming at me, you know. With her finger. And I was like, nope, I am not doing that. So they send me to the principal's office. And but at the time at that school, you're supposed to return your outfit, your PE clothes. There was like a lady who was collecting the dirty clothes and washing it there at the school. So I go and I take my clothing and I say, hey. And the lady spoke Spanish, obviously. And she's like, what happened, mija? And I was like, oh, well, the teacher wanted me to do a chicken dance. And I said, no. So she's sending me to the principal's office. Do you know where it is? And the lady was like, oh, my God, you're like one of the only students who've ever refused to do that, because that teacher does that all the time.
Isn't that incredible?
Okay. And she said, good for you, mija. Good for you. She told me where the principal's office was, and I go to the principal's office, and the principal goes like, so why are you here? And I said, because I refused to do the chicken dance that Miss So-and-so wanted me to do it. And she goes like, oh my God, I didn't know that. And I said, yeah, and I talked to the lady who washes the clothing, and she told me she does it all the time.
Oh my God. What was the teacher's name? I'm sorry if you don't mind.
I have no idea. But I went to the principal, and the principal took me to talk to the teacher. She was like a white lady, like she was really old. And so the teacher was like, they were arguing there, and then the principal took me and she says, you're not going to be in her classroom anymore, we're going to put you in a different classroom. So that's, you know, so that's what happened. And it was cool and interesting, because the principal was actually very open to hear me, and it wasn't like she dismissed me or didn't believe me. So I was like so happy that the principal was actually open, and it wasn't like the other teacher, you know, But yeah, that was my first day in middle school and PE class.
Wow, I can't believe that. So, yeah. I mean, I'm lucky I didn't. I mean, I went through other things that were just as crazy, but not that. I probably would have said the same thing too. I would have been like, I'm not doing no dance. What do you think I am? Right? Because, you know, I also came from Mexico and I also had just been told, you know, about my culture and how to be prideful, and I wasn't gonna accept anything like that. And I think that's the difference between some of the kids that were grew up here, is that they didn't have any pride for where they were from. I did, and I wasn't gonna take it. But yeah, I probably would have, you know, been kicked out too for that, right? But you know, if you've been listening to the show and before we went to break, I was telling a story about how in Mexico I had to fight, physically fight, for respect, for kids to accept me. And luckily, I things like that didn't necessarily bother me, right? Like, and they haven't affected me in the long run. Like, it could affect somebody else. But, you know, in my experience, I had to do it all over again when my parents got back together and brought me back to the United States. I remember also the very first day I had to get into a fight here in the United States. But now here's the difference with getting into a fight in Mexico at the time and getting into a fight here in the U.S. There wasn't a gang culture in Mexico. And where I'm from, there wasn't gang culture at all. There wasn't that mentality. It was more like individuals against you or whatever, for whatever reason. But here, you're dealing with gangbangers, kids that are already in gangs. So I remember my first day, there's kids, you know, these young little gangbanger looking kids that were making fun of me because of my clothing. And what was wrong with my clothing at the time? Remember, this is like the 90s.
Yes. Right?
Uh-huh. My clothing fits correctly.
Yes.
And because
you were not all baggy like them.
Yes. Because when we left, it was the scene, the music scene was rock, was indie. MTV still had white people on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
MTV was rock and roll, and you know, and that's what it was. So when I come back, it had shifted. It was no longer that. It was more like videos and gangs and all kinds of stuff. So, but I'm still dressed like I think everyone should dress and look, right?
Yes.
Just normal. But apparently that meant to them that either I was a nerd, or I wasn't a gangbanger, or I wasn't from here based on the way I
was. We're not from the same gang.
Wasn't from the same gang, wasn't from the same people, and I was ambiguous to them. So they would pick on me for that. And some kids just saw me dressed this way, which is very normal, right? Very normal, and decided to try to jump me. But they didn't know that that I wasn't your average kid. And sure enough, I got into a fight with three people the same day, my first day in school, in junior high. I got into a fight with the local gangbangers. They didn't like the result. And I remember, next thing you know, there was a fight at 3 p.m. after school. Here's where I think I ended up being lucky, is that the people that were taking care of me here in the U.S. on my mom's behalf happened to be these old cholo veterano types. In other words, these former old gangbangers that happened to be my distant cousins, but they were from the local gang, but just old people, right? Guys in their 30s at the time. And they had to come to pick me up. And I remember being extremely embarrassed of it. Mm-hmm. Like seeing these guys with these lowriders picking me up after school. And here's this little ambiguous light-complected kid getting in the car that doesn't look like them, but with, you know, no tattoos, nothing, just a normal kid getting into the car with them. And I remember after school, here I was walking, and I was, because and of course I could have avoided it, but I wasn't going to avoid it because I was a little tough kid back then. And I remember walking directly to where the exit was, and people were already like gathering up because there was going to be a fight. And when I look around, to my surprise, I see that my big cousins are just towering over everybody because they were very tall, and just one, they had no idea that I was going to be the one involved in this mess. And sure enough, when I arrive, you know, people start, my cousins are like, what's going on here? And then, like, incredible. I remember the faces, those little young gangbanger kids noticed that they were there for me. It started saying, are these your cousins? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I heard the whispers. The whispers were going around everywhere. No, that's his cousin, blah, blah, blah. And then Mike is like, were you about to get into a fight? I was like, yeah, man, those guys are picking on me. My cousins are like, I'm like, wait, who's your dad? Who's my cousin? Started asking questions. And next thing you know, everybody just went away. I left with my cousins and they never messed with me again. And I think the people that saved me were essentially just my cousins because they were from a former gang in the local area. So, but again, like this was shocking to me because I never, like, you know, it's just weird things that we have to go through, right? As Mexican kids. But the good thing is that I never once had to go through the same thing again because they were afraid that they knew that I had backup or I had support from these older guys and that I wasn't this, you know, kid that you could just mess with. And yeah, that's just a funny experience that I lived here.
Wow. That is amazing. That's so funny.
And it didn't end there, Brenda. It continued, but at least this time it took a different form, but it wasn't against gangs or anything. Other people, you know, you remember those days, what we experienced before Prop 187 and all that.
Dude, you know what? When I came here, like I told you, I came in the middle of the school year, right? So, because I was going to like a school that had different tracks or students will come like, you know, at different times of the school year. My track goes into vacation. And at that point, all the kids who came in the middle of the school year for that track are sent into special, you know, like super high speed second language, English as a second language kind of class where you had to like learn English in like 2 months.
Oh, man.
So we go into this classroom and all of us, you know, it's probably 10 of us. We became really close because we were spending every day of the school year for 2 months just working on our English. And I'm not going to lie to you. Half of them were killed by a gun. You know?
Wow.
So that was my biggest shock. Like, it was, they were trying to fit in. They wanted to fit into this culture and this community. They were desperate. And in their desperation, they're like, oh, I'll join a gang. And they were shot. They were shot. And you remember the drive-bys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so many, many of those close friends, I lost them in drive-bys and because of the gangs. But that was the craziest thing because to me it was like we're fighting with these teachers who are like super highly racist against us, and then we're also fighting with our own people, you know. So it's like I remember walking to school because I had to like we had to take the bus. It was my siblings, my cousins, and I, and we had to take the bus like at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to the school. And we're walking in the dark, you know, like this. We look like the you know, like this is Spanish program, La Familia Telerin. So all the little kids in a line walking in the dark, you know, racing to just catch the bus at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and then but I remembered when I lived in Mexico City, damn it. You know, it was like the most dangerous city in the world. But I was able to go to school when I was like 10 years old. I was able to do the same thing. Like I used to live in my house like around, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning on my own, take 2 buses to make it to my school in Mexico City. And I wasn't feeling.
Wow.
I came here and every time I had to step out of the house, I was scared. Wow. I was scared. I was like, you know, so we got in the bus and I was like super anxious because we didn't know what to expect. we got into school and I was like, my anxiety was through the roof.
Wow.
So, just experiencing all that. And now, like, I feel like it's almost coming back to the same thing, you know? It's just so many.
Worse.
Almost.
Yeah, because we have social worse. Media now. You know, back then, at least you knew somebody was talking about you and they'll talk to you in your face.
Oh, yeah.
And say, hey, you know, whatever, you know, want to pick a fight on you like you, you know, it's like, hey, let's beat you up outside of the school. And everybody knew who you were and everybody, you know, now it's like, it's just so, it's so scary.
You know, scary. And it's crazy how much time has passed, but. You know, we sound like these people that are reminiscing their days, but it wasn't even that long ago. We're not even talking about that long ago. And look how much people have changed in the way they
think. Society.
How much society has changed. But you know how much we have changed as a people, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a people, how insane it is, you know, how people have embraced this like right-wing MAGA hateful ideology. And I'm bringing that up because I remember when I was younger, I don't know in your time or your circles, but we were always very proud of being of Mexican descent. There was Chicanos, but even the Chicanos always knew that they were Mexican. Like, yeah, we're Chicanos because we live here, but we're Mexican.
Yeah.
I remember that clearly. And I remember getting into tiffs with people at school because they would discriminate a Mexican person, an undocumented person. And I remember the conversations and I remember the fights that would happen at our school because someone discriminated someone that was what they called, you know, the wetback word, right? They would call somebody wetback. The next thing you know, if someone that was a Chicano heard that, they would immediately like launch into a like, what did you call him? Like we would all stand up to defend that one person. And I remember feeling so empowered and so proud of these people, whether they were gang or not, because we knew that collectively we are the same people. There was nothing really dividing us, you know, as much, right? I mean, there were every now
as
and then.
As much, like, yeah. They, you know, they still like pick on you. But they didn't like when someone else picked on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like so, they could pick on you. They could pick on you. Like they made a difference between the Mexicans that were born here and the Mexicans that were. But it was very, it wasn't as bad. It was minimal. Like we all knew at the end of the day, we were Mexicans. Right. And I feel like, and I'm not trying to generalize everybody because not everybody thought that way. But the majority of people, at least in my circles at those days, we were down. Like we were all Mexican at the end. They would say Chicano every now and then, but it wasn't fully understood, I believe, by a lot of people. Like, it was just something to say, like, well, I'm from this side, I'm Chicano, or I'm from that side, I'm Mexican. Oh, yeah, but I'm Mexican too. Okay, so whatever, you want to add Chicano to your thing, that's cool, but we still knew we were the same, which saddens me nowadays with the way some of the Chicano, no, I'm not going to say Chicano movement, because that's totally different. A lot of Chicanos or Mexican-Americans have changed and literally embraced this really horribly racist ideology, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Unfortunately.
I don't know what happened. I really don't know what happened other than that. Sorry to interrupt you, but I don't even know what happened. I feel like the experiment worked on social media, on people. During the Obama years and the Biden years, the right wing has been doing their work, putting a lot of money into social media, a lot of money into changing the narrative, this idea of they're making you gay, the teachers are teaching subversive things to the kids, all this hyper-nationalism and flipping the script was all due to, in my opinion, I mean, please feel free to jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, but mostly social media and influencers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think the opposite party, I mean, both, you know, they've been trying to utilize the Democrats and the Republic, trying to utilize the media to persuade people's votes. And I think more recently, though, the Republicans have been putting a lot of effort on, you know, broadcasting. But I also, where I'm confused, what I really don't understand is where, when along the line, a lot of these Latinos lose the touch with their culture, you know, lose the human touch, because ultimately, at the end, we're all humans. Doesn't matter if you're documented, undocumented, you came from Mexico, you came from Ukraine, you came from whatever part of the world you came. We in this country seems to be like, there is a pivotal point where you lose that sense of, you know, the other people's struggles, you know, even though they themselves struggle at one point or another. What I do see is like, when there is already several generations that were born here in the U.S., and there was no keeping contact with your culture, that's where you see more and more people just pushing aside. But I don't understand people who, you know, some of my cousins who came with me and who lived the same struggles, like the things that we're just talking about. The same struggles. This, you know, I look very, very indigenous. People will like actually confuse me with people from India. You know, because I'm so brown. And so people like that, like some of my family who look like that, would be so supportive of Trump. And I honestly don't even understand why. And when you ask them, like I drill my cousin to tell me why, she just can't explain, you know? And all they say is, well, we need change. We need change. He's a businessman. He should manage this country as if it was a business. And I'm like, yeah, he's a lame businessman.
Wow.
But, you know, so that's some of the excuses that I get from them. And it's so baffling and scary, because they're not seeing anything else. They're just focused on like the little things that they get fed by their social media, get fed by his comments on X, his, you know, this videos that come out of him on TikTok. And they just go with that. And that's it. They don't research, they don't listen to anything else. And that's so scary. That is so scary.
Again, I blame it on the work, the psyop that they did on us through the last 20 years and how they changed the narrative basically on social media. Because what else could it be? I mean, what else could it be? You know, I see why he's appealing to people, right? I see that. But I also think that the fact that racists of all types were bothered by the woke movement, so all this hyper masculinity played a role also, right? Like why do you have Chicanos worried about certain beliefs or things that don't affect them at all? Why? Because they were being, you know, brainwashed basically, or targeted in social media. Because I can't seem to explain it either, other than the woke movement got really loud and you started seeing, I'm not saying the woke movement was bad or anything, or people that were woke were bad at all. I'm not saying that. I'm only saying that I believe that it was constantly attacked by people that were already racist, that wanted to have the right. How dare you take away my rights to say racist things? How dare you take away my beliefs against LGBTQ people? How dare you take away the rights that I can't say this out loud? I think that and hate, because the MAGA movement, or this, what we're living now, is motivated by hate. It straight up is. Anybody that argues with me is wrong. It's motivated by hate, right? And this nationalism that, you know, that has been pushed on everybody. So in other words, if you don't believe in this, you're not one of us. Mm-hmm. And another thing that our culture has that I don't know if it exists in other cultures is that we are already a very confused people from the beginning, right? With our culture and our ancestry, a lot of people are embarrassed of their indigenous roots. A lot of people deny their indigenous roots. And if you're from the Caribbean, a lot of the times you deny your African roots. So you see this all over the continent. And then there's levels, right? I want to say there's levels to the hate and discrimination. If you're from a whiter country, you discriminate the darker country. So all this colorism exists. So if you're Mexican, oh, you're Indian looking. But then you're not. But then you are, but then you're not. You're Indian when they want to attack you, but when you embrace your indigenous side, you're European or you're mixed, so shut up. So it's this complete, utter chaos and trauma that's happening to us. So if you come from Argentina, you're somewhat better than us, according to them. Why? Because they're more white. If you come from Costa Rica, well, we're better than you because we are more white. And if you come from South America, we're not like you because we're like this. Every country, every immigrant that comes here feels he's better than the one that was already here based on ignorance.
Yeah.
And us as Mexican Americans, or however we want to describe ourselves, is that we have a more understanding that is more progressive than many people from Mexico and other countries. Because why? Because we're learning how to embrace, learning how to be okay with us. They are not. Out there, they're not okay with that. Try talking to a South American about his indigenous roots. He's going to get offended.
Yeah.
But try talking to a Mexican American about his indigenous roots, and chances are he's going to tell you where he's from or what information he found on Ancestry.com. Right? So you get that, and you just plop it in the United States, and now you have a cauldron hate, plus other people and other groups that are mad that our people are so influential and our culture is just everywhere, right? So it bothers them. And our numbers are growing. We have kids. We use the parks. We use the metro. We use the services that are there for people.
Yeah.
We use the resources because that's what they're for, right? Like, why is it a problem that we go to parks?
But even then, we don't maximize all the resources. We don't take advantage because most of our Latino community, Mexicanos especially, and I see this because I work with different groups, different organizations. I worked for a while with UCLA in research, and I see the pride of our people, or our community. You know, the pride of the Mexican is, I don't want to take this. If I can work, I don't want to take this. If I can make the money, I don't want to take that, you know? And that's what I've seen over and over. And so when they say, oh, they just come and they get, most of the people who get it are not like first generation or the first time they're here. It's like already second generation or third or fourth. Those are the
two guys. I'm glad you said that.
You know, that's I remember the whole point of one of the research that I participated with UCLA was finding a gap between resources and monolingual families. You know, because the monolingual families were not tapping into all these resources, because those are the people that say, if I don't need it, I'm not going to take it. My father-in-law was like, when he was injured, because he used to work the fields, he was injured, he fell from an apple tree, broke his back, and they wanted to give him, I think it was disability. My father-in-law took it until he was able to walk. He walked and he stepped into that, and he made a big deal. My mother-in-law used to say the story. He made a big deal and he's like, that's it. I don't want your money. I can work now. But that's what you used to see a lot with like first generation people come here. They had pride. They're like, no quiero que me mantengas. I don't want you to like, you know, feed me and do everything for me, you know? But now you're saying that the second generations born here, they don't have a problem taking care of those resources, you know?
Wow. I want that to sink into people. I really want that to sink in deep, because there's so much lying going on our people that is ridiculous. And what you said there is common. And by the way, let me explain, because I have to make this correction. It's common mostly to Mexican people. There's something about Mexican pride that makes them not want to take advantage of resources. Now, again, let me just make this correction, too. I'm talking about an older generation. Mm-hmm. Now things might be different now because things have changed. But originally, when I was growing up, that was the case, too. I remember my mother and my family members looking down on people that did that. They'd be like, I can't believe they're collecting money for just being there. I remember that. And I would be like, you know, and I was a kid and I'd be like, yeah, that's right. I agree with my parents, you know, because it was something we didn't do. And I'm glad you brought that up.
You know, my mother was like a single mother, four kids. Okay. And my mom never took any free resource program or anything. She just refused to. She was like, I'd rather not. But my mom was just like, come on, mom. But she's like, I would rather not have you guys on any medical insurance than having to beg Medi-Cal to give you something. And I'm like, you're not begging. This is the program and your kids need it. But that was the pride they had, you know, that she was very proud. And yeah, it's true. You see it with older generations and mainly people coming from Mexico.
And I think this is one of the beautiful things of our culture that people don't appreciate. Because at the same time, I've also heard people have managed to flip that and make it racist in the sense that, oh, well, you guys are dumb for not taking advantage of the system that was there for you. You know what I mean? So now we've become dumb or somehow not intelligent because we're not taking advantage of these programs or the social help. Isn't that insane?
It's totally crazy. It's totally crazy. But again, it's like you see this thing of like, bad if you do, worse if you don't, you know? It's always like this. But I think it's just more like a separation, like a division, to create like this division. And because imagine if all, like, at least 10% of the Latinos that live in California will organize. We're like 4 million people just in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
10% of that is like 400,000 people. Imagine 400,000 people marching on the streets. I know there was like recently some march about the immigration, but imagine 400,000 people on the street, just Latinos. It's dangerous.
It is. It's very dangerous. And which, you know, hopefully at some point we talk about, you know, I really want to talk to people about apartheid and how the South Africans were able to unite and basically bring down a country that was anti-Black African. And I think there's a lot to learn from that movement. And if we organized and we had that power, we could literally paralyze the country. But I don't think now with social media, it seems impossible because there's so much people divided and they're getting bombarded and targeted with so much negative things and moving people away from not doing protests. You know, for example, this whole protesting that was going on here in LA, somehow the right-wing media made it seem like everybody was burning flags when it was in fact only two incidents of people burning flags. And the people that were burning flags were anarchists. They were anarchists that were American citizens. Two people burned flags in two different places and the entire immigrant community, and specifically Mexican, is now burning flags. Like, we hate America. And we're burning flags. But it was only two people in two different parts of the state. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the videos, the people that are burning the flags, I mean, look, I don't even know if they're Mexican people, by the way, but because they're covered, I mean, their faces are covered, and you could see all the people in a circle just with their eyes like, are you burning a flag? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why are you guys doing that?
You know, the